This episode of Alone is brought to you by our Audible free trial page at audibletrial.com/Sigler. This is the last episode of Alone. What if you want to hear the other books in the Generations trilogy or any audiobook by moi? We recommend you sign up for Audible, a wonderful service that both the director of Doom and I use constantly for audiobooks because we love audiobooks. Go to audibletrial.com/Sigler. Sign up for a free 30-day no-risk trial and get you a downloadable audiobook for free. Turns out you don't like Audible? Cancel your trial, keep the audiobook, and pay nothing. Take it! It's yours! That's audibletrial.com/Sigler. And now on with our story.
Welcome to the serial audiobook Alone, an unabridged podcast of Book 3 of the Generations trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler. Performed by A. Kovacs. This novel is available in print as an ebook or as a full-length unabridged audiobook. For links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Audible, please visit scottsigler.com/alone.
Hello, junkies. Yes, it is the last episode of Alone. The last episode of the Generations trilogy. And what a trip it has been. Remember when M woke up in the dark in the opening of Alive? How far things have come since then. And now we get the final closure on her story. Since this is the last episode, next week we have our traditional Q&A episode, the Alone Q&A episode. Do you have questions about this story? Do you have questions about the Generations trilogy? How about the GFL? How about the Siglerverse? This is your chance to ask your future Dark Overlord a question. The Director of Doom will collate these questions and read them to me live. Or, if you want to record your own damn self asking the question, send us an MP3. You can send a text question or the audio MP3 question. You send them to info@emptyset.com. The deadline for questions is midnight Eastern time on Thursday, May 24th, 2018. It has been a long trip, you guys. So long, it has covered trillions of light years. I will tell you all about the feels I have for completing this trilogy once the episode is done. But for now, let me get you caught up on the story, and then we will sing this swan song. Previously on Alone. The Zolotl survived the battle with the dragon. Now, before other alien ships arrive, Maddie has given the order to leave Omiokin behind forever. The surviving birthday children and a handful of Springers head out into the void as they begin a search for a new homeworld, but Maddie still has some difficult, heart-wrenching decisions to make. And now, the end of this trilogy. Here we go with Alone, episode number 32.
I ask Bishop to meet me in the crystal ball.
My body has healed, mostly. The Zolotl has been repaired, mostly. We are 4 days into our journey into the great unknown. Our search for a new home has begun. I will soon give up my leadership role, but not quite yet. Being the leader carries many burdens. It also carries a few privileges. One such privilege is taking the crystal ball as my own.
This will be my personal space, my office, if you will, for years to come. When I was first here, there was a long dead body on the metal grate floor, stabbed in the back by the spear that became our symbol of leadership. Quite fitting, when you think about it.
The spear is gone, of course. So is the body. People removed it, cleaned up the stains left by decomposition. Most of the stains, anyway. In a few spots, the metal is permanently discolored. I think that's good. We should never forget the evil we've done to each other. M didn't know who that corpse was. Matilda did. She set up that murder, watched it happen. This place was where Bishop, M, Gaston, Aramovsky, and Ilsefani discovered we weren't in some endless dungeon, that we were in a starship far above the land promised to us. This was where M first met Matilda. Those two women are no more. I remain, a combination of them both. I sit at a desk Borjigin crafted for me. It's made of gray stone, with the top polished flat as glass. He also found me a lovely chair. My desktop is clean, uncluttered. The new people made me gifts, a glass inkwell, a quill made from a black chicken feather, and a thick, leather-bound book. The cover is branded with the null set symbol. The pages are blank, save for the first one, where Barca drew a beautiful image of Lefa for me to remember her by. The only other thing on my desk is a white porcelain cup sitting on a white saucer. Curls of steam slowly rise up from the tea inside. I pick up the delicate cup and take a sip. I think of Corinne Bello. She was right about one thing at least. Tea is much better than Acha. I wish she were here to have a cup with me. I lost her twice, once as M's Bello, once as Matilda's Corinne. Losing friends once is hard enough. It's not fair I have to lose everyone a second time. I stare out the crystal ball's clear walls at an endless sea of stars. In the direction of our current heading, there is nothing but empty space. Behind us, a fist-sized crescent of yellow, brown, and blue. Omiokin, in shadow because we're heading away from it. I can also see tiny crescents of the planet's two moons, one bluish, one maroon. Every minute we travel, Omiokin appears smaller and smaller. Soon, I won't see it as color, only as a point of light. Not long after that, I'm told, the Zolotl's physics-altering engines, built from schematics provided by a 500-million-year-old race of spacefaring aliens, will activate, and we will leave this area of the galaxy behind forever. I hear feet on the ladder that leads down from our ship. I look up. The ladder seems to float there in space, connecting the ball to a small hole in the Zolotl's copper hull. Bishop descends. The hull looks a mess. The dragon's missile fire left huge craters, forever frozen splashes in a metal pond. Some of the rings overlap each other. I feel fortunate those strikes didn't take out the crystal ball. I think of the people we lost on that desperate mission. Lefa, the Admiral, Pyrrha, Yong, Ashelman and Abrantes, Yilmaz, Bawden, Marcus and Benga, Schumalk, McWhite, Goldberg, and Dababa. Aramofsky. He wanted redemption. He got it. I will make sure future generations know of him, not just as a hero, but not just as a villain either. My people need to understand that all of us are capable of change. We don't have to be bad forever. We can fight our urges. We can choose to be good. Zubiri has retired at the tender age of 13. She wants nothing to do with engineering or science, and definitely nothing to do with weapons and war. Maybe she'll change as she grows older. For now, she's chosen to raise pigs. The new people are teaching her their ways. Victor is still in a med chamber, kept unconscious by Kenzie. She says he should have died from his injuries. She's at a loss to explain how he was even conscious, let alone able to pilot that fighter back to the Zolotl. A bullet through his liver, lacerated stomach, punctured lung, and more. Kenzie tells me it could be months before he's out. I've made sure old Victor can't get anywhere near him. Aside from myself, Zubiri, Victor, and Callie, who is as annoying as she ever was, there is only one other survivor of that mission. Ramses Bishop. He reaches the bottom of the ladder. I stand to meet him. I take in his blonde curls, his dark yellow eyes. He is all smiles and scabs and scars.
You look well, Maddie. Beautiful as ever.
I, too, am all scabs and scars, but I have no smile to offer. Even for a woman as old as I, this kind of thing never gets easier. And yet, it must be done.
Thank you for coming.
I almost ask him what he thinks of the view of leaving Umayyogin, but I realize that such pleasantries are procrastination, delaying the words that need to be said, because I don't want to hurt him. Perhaps there is still a bit of girl left in this ancient woman after all. He's smiling, yes, but it's mostly empty. Hollow. He is happy to be alive, happy I'm alive, happy our people are safe. But, as I have, he's left a trail of dead friends in his wake. This huge, strong man is no brute. He feels deep loss. He knows great pain. His heart has been broken over and over. I am about to break it yet again.
We can't be together, I say. I am telling you, once and for all, that there is no us.
His smile fades. He blinks slowly.
You're breaking up with me?
That's not exactly right. I'm not the person he was with on Umayyogin. That was M. But I nod anyway.
I'm sorry, I say. I don't want to lead you on in any way. But why? Because I'm over 1,000 years old. I have a millennium's worth of memories and wisdom that give me perspective on life. You aren't even 20. You are a man, yes, a great man who has sacrificed endlessly for our people and will continue to do so. But compared to my age, you are barely even a child. It would not work. I am doing the right thing by letting you go now.
He stares at me for a few moments. He turns his head, gazes out at the blanket of bright stars.
It's not fair, he says quietly.
I nod.
I know.
He wipes away a silent tear.
I did everything I was supposed to do, he says. I was a good person, a good man. I backed you every step of the way, even when I knew I shouldn't. I changed who I was to be with you.
I reach out and take his big, scarred hand. I expect him to pull away. He does not. We lock fingers. Through his grip, I sense more of his pain. He desperately doesn't want to let me go. I remember how his hands felt against my skin. That part of me wants him still.
You are a good person, I say. Just not a good person for me. And I am not a good person for you, because the one you did those things for is gone. I'm not me anymore, Ramses.
He hangs his head. Another tear drips down. He sniffs once, then nods.
I think I knew this was coming. I sensed you were different. I understand, Maddie. I just don't want it to be true.
I start to say, reality is what it is, whether we like it or not. But I stop myself. He doesn't need a lecture. He doesn't need this explained. He is hurting enough without me adding to it by being a know-it-all asshole.
You look just like her, he says. I know your scars. I know how you got each and every one of them. Why do you have to look just like her?
He lifts his head. Tears line his cheeks, and he does not care. He is a warrior. He is a hero.
We were made for each other, he says.
I nod.
We were. But we're mismatched in time. I know you'll find someone. You will make some lucky woman on this ship impossibly happy, and you will have your family.
He gives my hand a final squeeze. Without another word, he climbs the ladder. I watch him until he vanishes into the ship. Then I sit at my desk and gaze out at the stars. 12 centuries of wisdom, of watching people interact, of watching heartbreak and healing. It all tells me Ramses Bishop will be fine. That doesn't diminish his current pain, not in the least, but before he knows it, he'll find love again. Ramses Bishop will be happy. Will I? I am 1,208 years old. I have the body of a girl of 18. The cherished are alien to me now, wrinkled black things that reek of a time of war and lies and blood and hatred. The birthday children are just that, children. The things they find important are mostly meaningless to me, things I left behind centuries ago. A few of the new people are 100 years old or more, but even they seem like mere infants. Barca and the Springers are another race entirely, friends, but so different in the way they think and act. My memories are coming back now. Although they are still a jumble, pieces are starting to fall into place. My final puzzle, that of my own past, is almost complete. I open the book. I look at the picture of Lafa, then flip to the first page. It's blank. I dip the quill into the inkwell, and I begin to write. I made the sacrifices that needed to be made. For my people, I did what had to be done. Because of that, I am the only one of my kind. My name is Maddie Savage. I am alone. Epilogue. This is the life of Matilda Savage. This is the life of M. Savage. This is the story of our people and our continuing journey. And now we approach a new planet. Will this be the place our next chapter begins? We can only hope. If that happens, when it happens, I will create Volume 2 of our history. But for now, Volume 1 is complete. July 14th, 3892. Signed, Maddie Savage. I close the leather book. I sit back in my chair, stare at the well-worn cover. It's finished. I can't believe it. I did it. I finished my first book. I've been alive for 12 centuries. I've accomplished so much. I didn't think I could feel this way again, reel from that rush of accomplishment. As I stare at the book, my constant companion of the last 4 years, I realize this is among the greatest things I have done. Footsteps on the ladder. I'm not supposed to be bothered here, which means it can only be one person, the leader of our people. The crystal ball is a disaster. There are food wrappers all over the metal grate floor. Scrolls, both tied up and loose, litter my stone desktop, as do crumbs and smears of meals past. I'm ever grateful we didn't bring ants with us into space, or they would live here for certain. I've been wearing the same toga for days. For weeks, actually. I'm pretty sure I stink. Bad. Some grand old matron of the human race I turned out to be. I glance up. 2 people coming down, not just one. I sweep as much of the garbage as I can off the desk and into the trash bin at its side, realizing too late the bin is already overflowing. I've made the mess worse. The leader reaches the bottom of the ladder. I straighten my toga as best I can.
Hail, Maria!
Maria D'Souza rolls her eyes at me.
Do you have to do that crap, Maddie? We've been over this before. You can just say hello.
She wears a green toga dotted with polished bits of steel. The Springers manufacture most of our clothes now, and usually decorate fabric with bits of polished glass, shaped copper, buttons of gold carved from old storage drives, anything that is colorful and fun. Not Maria, though. The only accent she allows is steel, which matches the polished rectangle hanging around her neck. She chooses steel because that's what weapons are made from. She wants everyone to remember that war may come to us again, and if it does, we need to be ready. Her forehead circle is gone. Callie developed a way to surgically remove the symbols. No one has them anymore. No one except me. I not only kept mine, I had it modified, added a line to it. My null set symbol is a part of who I am. Maria didn't come alone. Little sandaled feet reached the last rung. The 3-year-old boy turns, looks at me, and smiles wide.
Auntie!
He runs to me and I pull him in for a glorious hug. I tousle his curly blonde locks. With his mother's light brown skin and his father's hair and dark yellow eyes, this boy will soon be a heartbreaker.
Hello, Walter. Are you behaving?
He kisses my cheek. When he does, his nose leaves a streak of snot on my skin. I don't even care.
Ew, Auntie,
he says, wrinkling his tiny nose.
Stinky!
I'm 12 centuries old and can still get embarrassed? Stunning how we continue to learn about ourselves.
Sorry, Walt. I've been too busy to bathe.
He runs to his mother and hangs on her arm. She swings him lightly, absently, as if he's nothing more than a giggling handbag. Maria nods to the desk.
You finished it?
How did you know?
I've never seen that book closed before. Well, did you?
A warm feeling in my chest. Of all the things I've done, perhaps this is the one I'm most proud of.
Yes, I did.
Maria lets out a very unleader-like squeal. With her free arm, she hugs me, kisses my cheek.
Congratulations!
My body stiffens. I can't help it.
Oh, sorry,
Maria says. She takes a step back.
I know you don't like to be touched. I just got so excited for you.
I nod. The moment isn't ruined, but it's become awkward. Little kids can hold me, hug me, kiss me, but not adults. I don't feel comfortable around adults. The birthday children mostly leave me alone here. The cherished have learned not to bother. I can't seem to exchange anything other than superficial pleasantries with them. The new people are the worst. They bow when they see me, treat me like I'm some kind of deity. I hate it.
I'll make this fast, Maria says. Three things.
That's her style. She communicates quickly and succinctly, then moves on. When I stepped down as leader, Ramses didn't want the job. Neither did Teresa or Xander. Borjigin won our first election. He worked very hard and established several new policies that helped improve the ship. But in the end, he wanted to focus on building machines and repairing long-broken parts of the Zolotl. After his one-year term as Yelani, that's what we call our overall leader, he didn't run for re-election. Maria has won every election since. She and Bishop are married. I have seen them together many times. They were happy before the birth of their son, and now are even more so. She is in her third one-year term as Yelani. Maria visits me more often than anyone else. All decisions are hers to make, but she frequently asks for my counsel.
Three things, I say. Go ahead. First, Barkar is trying to set up a puppet government again, with him as king.
I'm reminded why I stay away from everyone, a ship full of children and their petty motivations.
This is the second time he's tried that?
Third, Maria says.
This time he's claiming that since the Springers are a minority, he should have a louder say in government, that their rights are being infringed upon.
The Springers have exactly the same rights as everyone else. I tilt my head backwards, indicating the turquoise-colored planet we've been approaching for months.
He's doing it because of that?
Of course, Maria says.
I think he's angling for a Springer-only homeland if the planet proves permanently habitable. Anyway, I need you in the next session of Congress to advise against any separationist movements. Will you help?
I sigh, but I nod. While the Springers love Barkha, they realize M is the main reason they're alive at all. The Springers don't really understand that I'm not her anymore, but since I look like her, I have significant sway over their general opinion.
Second thing, Maria says. You've insisted on keeping our history in that book alone. Now that it's complete, we need it properly recorded for future generations. I'm putting my foot down, Maddie. That book comes with me.
I glance at it. The leather-bound tome has been my only friend for the last 4 years. I don't want to let it go. But I'm not the leader, and that's not my choice to make. I pick it up off the desk, feel its familiar weight. Before I can change my mind, I hand it to Maria.
Wonderful, she says. Just one more debt the citizens of this ship owe you.
This is the most talking I've done in months. I feel my skin start to crawl. I just want to be by myself.
And the third thing? Someone is coming down right after I go up. I sit in my desk chair. Please, Maria, I don't want to talk to anyone.
Too bad, so sad, she says.
4 years of hiding here is enough. I don't give a damn how many lifetimes you've lived. Listen to me carefully. The person coming down made a choice. There was no coercion, none whatsoever. I conducted the interviews myself, repeatedly. So did Ramses and Teresa.
What are you talking about?
You'll see. Maria kneels, holds the book in front of Walter. This book is very important, honey. Can you hold it tight and not let it go? A wide-eyed Walter nods solemnly, impressed with his new responsibility. He clutches the book tight to his chest. Maria scoops up the toddler with one arm.
Remember, this was a choice, she says to me, and she climbs the ladder.
I watch her go. Part of me wants her to stay, but it's useless. Conversation is always stilted, forced. I just have nothing in common with these children. Maria enters the ship. Someone else starts down the ladder, a man wearing a black toga. He moves with a certain grace, a certain dignity. When he reaches the bottom, he turns to face me. It's Victor Mueller.
Hello, Maddie, he says. A pleasure to see you again.
Other than a few passing words in Congress when I'm required to speak against particularly stupid ideas, I haven't spoken with Victor in years. He's matured. I can sense it more than see it.
I'm very tired, I say. What can I do for you?
He's become more handsome since we left. There is a scar on his cheek that he didn't have repaired. He has the face and body of someone 17 or 18, with well-defined muscles and young skin. I know he and the other soldiers train for combat every day, teaching hundreds of new people and springers in the ways of war. Victor, clearly, is in excellent shape.
I thought we might talk, he says.
I rub my eyes. That's the last thing I want, Victor. Whatever would we talk about?
Do you remember when I volunteered to join Matilda's mutiny?
I stare at him, feel my eyes narrow.
I do remember. Who told you about it? I didn't need anyone to tell me about it. I was there.
Don't be ridiculous. That was 400 years ago. You weren't even... He can't remember that. He wasn't there. His progenitor was. The young man before me smiles.
Please, call me Vic from now on. Victor was someone else. We merged. We are one.
For the first time in years, I wish I had my spear. I stand up, so suddenly filled with rage, I'm shaking.
How could you do that to him? He was just a boy.
A boy who chose it, he says. Didn't Maria tell you?
She did. Her interviews. Those were with young Victor and old Victor both.
He wanted to be overwritten?
Such a harsh term, Victor says. But yes, that part of me wanted it, perhaps even more than the old part did.
I feel a burst of excitement, of hope. Someone I can talk to, someone who has been through what I've been through.
But why?
He reaches out slowly, takes my hand. I let him. For once, my skin does not crawl at the touch of someone else.
Because young Victor was in love with you, he says. And while he never told you, so was old Victor. And now, we both are.
I pull my hand away. I can't believe this is happening.
You go through that process and you assume you can just come here and what, that I'm yours?
Victor, Vic, laughs.
As if anyone could make Maddie Savage do anything she didn't want to do. I don't assume anything. I'm just a centuries old man asking a centuries old woman if she'd like to chat for a bit.
The way he and Em fought together on Omayokan, the way he and Matilda fought together in the rebellion, brave, selfless.
both versions of him. I remember plunging the knife into Matilda's heart, her fury, her terror. But she was evil incarnate. She deserved it. Vic, the Vic I knew for centuries, did not. "Old Victor helped us," I say. "He shouldn't have had to die that way." Vic's smile widens.
"He didn't die. He's still alive."
It takes me a moment to process that. "But the ritual," I say. Vic shrugs.
"The former me and the former old me agreed there was no need for it. Everyone saw what happened to you, Maddie. When he went to the X, he knew he would live on as long as his body would allow. We have dinner together every night. We even started a book club."
We're all one people now. There's no need for barbaric executions. So obvious now, and such a simple decision to make, yet it never occurred to me this was possible. It's nice to know that as old as I am, there can still be surprises. Vic walks around the desk. He adjusts his black toga, sits on the desk's front left corner, and stares out at the blue planet.
"Speaking of books, Maria told me you just finished yours. Maybe that means you'd like to take a break. If you want me to leave, I will. But if you'd like to sit with me and talk, I'd like that."
The overwrite, perhaps now more accurately described as fusing, I suppose, carried risks. Young Victor knew the person he was would die in the process, cease to exist just as M ceased to exist. He knew that. He did it anyway. He did it for me. I shuffle more than walk around the desk, suddenly self-conscious of the trash I have to step over to do so. I sit on the desk's front right corner. "Yes, I'd like to talk," I say. "I'd like that very much."
And that is the end of episode number 32. That is the end of Alone. That is the end of the Generations trilogy. We here at Empty Set hope you have enjoyed this star-spanning coming-of-age tale. We loved bringing it to you. Now, as I have said before, the final podcast episode of a series is a big deal because it means that series is finally in our rearview mirror. So it is time to say goodbye to these characters. We won't be doing more books to say what happened to M and the rest of the birthday children as they look for that new home. Not unless a fluke of nature happens and we somehow get a TV show, which isn't in the cards right now. So maybe someday I will write a prequel, the story of Matilda and how she got to be such a damn gangster. But right now, here's what I got going on. I have to write GFL Book 6, Book 7, and Book 8. I have to finish a GFL novella, The Zoroastrian Guild, with J.C. Hutchins. I have Hunter Hunterson & Sons War Journals Volume 1 and 2 to release on audiobook and on ebook. I have to finish Mount Fitzroy. I have Crypt Book 1 to finish and Crypt Book 2 to write. Man, I have got a lot of stuff coming your way. So it looks like the Generations trilogy is completely done. However, you will see certain characters from the Generations trilogy in upcoming Sigler books. How will he tie it all together, you ask? Don't doubt me, son. Doubting me can get you cut. So it's all over. And it has been so much work. This process has taken years. I started the story with Mark Tavani, my editor at Del Rey. He edited a lot. He signed the trilogy, edited alive. He left midway through Alight Book 2. Trisha Narwani at Del Rey took over and helped me finish what I thought was a really, really strong book. And then Trisha was there from square one for Alone. And I think the book and the finale of the trilogy is stronger because of her work on it. But now all of that is done. I have years of work ahead of me, just on the books I mentioned, before I can do any more work for Del Rey. So for the next couple of years, junkies, it's you and me. I am putting my big publishing career on hold to finish the books I've been promising you for a long time. We could let the GFL stagnate, and I could get on to other things, but I'm not going to do that to you. We're going to finish it. We're going to finish it right. You will be happy. When you finish crying and snotting all over yourself from the tragedy, I mean. But That is it. That is it for the Generations trilogy. That is it for Alone. All done. Get your Q&A questions sent in to info@mgset.com. Remember, the deadline for questions is midnight Eastern Time on Thursday, May 24th, 2018. We will be back next week to answer your questions. Until then, we will talk to you all real soon.
You have been listening to Alone, Book 3 in the Generations trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler. Performed by A. Kovacs. Produced by Scott Sigler and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. Follow Scott on Twitter and Instagram, where his handle is @ScottSigler, ScottSigler, one word, or join our Facebook group at facebook.com/ScottSigler. Theme music is the song Unseen Horrors by Kevin MacLeod.